join us, won't you, for the University of Alaska Radio Forum. Each week at this time, a panel of experts discusses a topic of interest. Here with this week's panel and topic is your moderator, Jerry Reinwan, head of the University of Alaska's Journalism Department.
Alaska's vast natural resources have lured thousands of adventurers to this last frontier for over 100 years. Trappers, gold miners, and fishermen first probed Alaska's vast wilderness, seeking to make their fortunes. These rugged pioneers probably had no idea that they were breaking ground and blazing the trail for another type of adventurer, the settler. It was these hardy individuals who put down roots, built homes, raised families, and in effect, carved a state from an area which many outsiders had written off as a frozen icebox. On today's University of Alaska Forum, we'll be talking with one of the men who came to Alaska to help build and mold the great land into the booming and vigorous state we see today. Our guest on this edition of University of Alaska Forum is Bon Davis, a longtime Alaskan and a man who homesteaded in the wilderness outside of Fairbanks in the early 1940s, and then watched his 160-acre site grow into the town of North Pole. Bon Davis and his wife Bernice started out their married life following the trail established by their fathers, school teaching. For the first 3 years of their marriage, they taught in 2- and 3-room schools in the lower 48. During the next 5 years, Mrs. Davis became the mother of 2 boys, Neil and Lewis, and she had to leave her teaching job to devote full time to raising her family. Mr. Davis continued his teaching job for several years, but eventually decided to leave the classroom for a better-paying job in a coal mine. After that job ended, Mr. and Mrs. Davis and their 2 sons packed up their belongings and bounced around the West and Midwest, seeking any type of job that was available. The Davis's financial picture improved slightly in Chicago, when Bernice and Bon were both able to find employment and save a few dollars. About 9 months after they arrived in the Windy City, an opportunity came along which was exciting and promising. Mr. Davis was offered a construction job on a defense project near Excursion Inlet, which is located about 70 miles from Juneau. Because of wartime travel regulations, the Davis's 2 sons could not make the trip to Alaska, so they stayed behind with relatives in Iowa. Mrs. Davis was unable to travel immediately to Alaska with her husband, but she did make the journey 7 months later. Because no women were allowed at the Excursion Inlet project, Mrs. Davis was separated from her husband. She stayed in Juneau, and about every 3 months, Mr. Davis took a short vacation from his job to join his wife in the then territorial capital. Mr. and Mrs. Davis hold many fond memories of their stay in southeastern Alaska, but one highly unusual Juneau experience is probably more vivid than the others. Bon Davis recalls what happened.
I decided that I should take her out to Mendenhall Glacier. I had been able to obtain a box camera, one of those old cheap ones, and it was the last camera available in Juneau. So I got this camera, and my wife and I took the bus out to Hawk Bay, and then we proceeded to walk somewhere around 4 or 5 miles toward Mendenhall Glacier. There were signs posted, no picture-taking or no photography. And my wife kept reminding me of the fact that these signs forbid taking pictures. And I said, well, that only means right along the coast. So I kept right on taking pictures like mad. And we got up to Mendenhall Glacier. And in order for us to get up to the glacier itself, we had to climb up over a ledge. Got her on the ledge beside me, and she got some handholds, and then she put her feet on my shoulders and was able to scramble on up. Then she gave me a hand, and I got up, and we examined the glacier and took some pictures, and then we started to get down. I got down on the ledge first, and then she put her feet on my shoulder, and about that time, we heard the splatter of a bullet not very many feet away. And finally, another one. And I started cussing about these people who were gun crazy and so on. Well, finally, we got it down, but by that time, it was a regular fuel slate of bullets a hitting around. And we got down behind a moraine that had been pushed over by the glacier, And that was a protection, and we were able to walk along that. And finally got down a ways, and we found out, after all these bullets were whizzing over our heads, that we were right in the middle of a rifle range. Finally, that subsided enough, and we made a run for the lake where there was a truck picking up some ice. They used to haul ice from Mendenhall Lake, glacier ice, down to the bars and restaurants in Juneau. And I got down there, and I knew this fellow, and he wanted to know why in the world I was carrying a camera. He said, you know, it's forbidden here. And he said, give me that camera. He said, somebody comes along, and you're liable to get thrown in jail for it. I said, well, take my picture first. So he did. Then we finally took this stuff to the Davis photography shop in Juneau. And when we went to get the pictures, my wife got them. He informed her that she'd better never try to take those pictures out of Alaska, that we were subject to, I believe it was a $10,000 fine and banishment from Alaska if they cared to push charges, if the Army ever got a hold of it. Well, we held on to those pictures. I still have them. I didn't turn them over to the enemy or anything like that.
Once the job at Excursion Inlet was completed, Mr. and Mrs. Davis moved to Skagway for a short time. Mrs. Davis suffered from a severe attack of asthma while in Skagway, and the local doctor advised Bond that the climate of interior Alaska would be better for his wife's health. After a short stay in Whitehorse, Mr. and Mrs. Davis decided to move on to Fairbanks to seek out a homestead site. They had narrowed their choices for building their long-desired new home to a stretch of land southeast of Fairbanks near the old Richardson Trail. Then they began the difficult task of picking a site.
We stopped along the road, and Harvey Carlisle, who was in the land office, had given me some ideas of what to look for and what to avoid, and really gave a good description of the country. We stopped at several places now. For instance, at 8 Mile, there used to be an old roadhouse there. That was pretty well in ruins at the time. We went on out to around 10 Mile. Well, that didn't look too good because we thought it was low. Well, we were correct in that respect because the following year you'd had to have a rowboat to got most any place around there. But we did see this ridge of timber and drove on up to 15 Mile. And right at that point, this old road, part of the old Richardson Trail, joined the new part, and they had cleared the snow from the old trail to allow trucks to go in and haul cordwood out. So we stopped our car. We'd rented a car and to go out there, and we started walking. It was really beautiful. Snow was about 30 inches deep. Then we followed this trail along, and farther we went, well, the more impressed we were, and finally seemed like both of us had the same idea at the same time, because we just up and said, well, this is it.
Mr. and Mrs. Davis immediately filed for their homestead site, which was located about mile 14 on the old Richardson Trail. One of their first tasks was to build a log cabin, and as Bond Davis recalls, it was an experience he'll never forget.
I knew absolutely nothing about log cabins. I'd seen a few, of course. But I didn't even know how to start in to fell a tree. In fact, I didn't even know what kind of tools I should have, so I bought a docking saw, of all things, to try to fell trees with, and a single-bit axe, and I had a hammer. Well, then after I got them felled, the next thing was getting them up to the site where I was going to build. Well, I did this by cutting some poles and laying crosswise on top of the snow. Then I'd take the larger logs and skid them across those poles. And it was rather good exercise getting them up there to where I was going to use them. And then, of course, when it actually came into starting building, well, I didn't even know which way to lay the logs other than they went on top of one another. And I knew that you did put chinking in between them, and I was under the false impression that you wanted to leave all the room you could for all the chinking you could put in. And, of course, this was later proved to be a false idea because the squirrels, they could push this moss out between the logs and come in and out of that cabin whenever they took an ocean. And then when it came to selecting the logs, for instance, on the length of them, well, the log was a little bit short. I went on ahead and used it, and then I'd put a window right in next to it. That was sort of a peculiar way of doing it. And if it was a little bit crooked, I'd turn it to one side, and we'd add more moss. And of course, my wife was gathering the moss and doing the chinking, so that was no problem for me. But when we got through with that thing, we had six windows and two doors in that 15 by 20 cabin. And when the boys came the following summer, of course, we had to add on, so we put on another 15 by 20, but we had learned a few things, and we didn't make quite as many mistakes with the addition as we had with the old original cabin.
A few months after Bernice and Bon Davis filed on their homestead, their sons, Neil and Lewis, joined them. When they had selected their homestead site, Mr. and Mrs. Davis thought they were near enough to Fairbanks so that getting the boys to school would be no problem. However, their old used car broke down, and they soon realized that it would be very difficult to transport Neil and Lewis to and from Fairbanks on a regular basis. There were no school buses or neighbors taking children to school, so Bernice and Bon Davis decided to enroll their sons in a correspondence school program.
Decided that we'd enroll them in the Calvert home study courses. Now, these Calvert courses, they're well designed, and they're written in language suited to each grade level. They completed papers and worksheets the boys sent in, and they were gone over carefully with every omission and error noted. If the work sent in indicated that some point wasn't fully understood, why, a paragraph or paragraphs of clarification would be included with the returned papers. Neil and Lewis learned to study on their own, and at the same time they were learning subject matter. But that learning to study on their own perhaps was more important. It was, besides attending to their studies during the fall days, well, the boys helped us around. They'd prepare gathering in vegetables and berries and things of that sort and getting wood ready. But the minute that the cold weather struck, they were willing to, that is severe weather, they were willing to get busy on their correspondence courses. And so they made pretty good progress in it. They sit there with the barrel stove and gasoline lanterns. But then after they'd got their schoolwork done, and we had insisted on the schoolwork had to be done, a certain amount of it every day. But then we'd have family discussions, too. And my wife was very good at selecting games or concocting games that had a certain educational angle to them. And then we'd have our discussions every evening, and we'd discuss about anything that came up. And it might be something about geography or history or government, maybe human nature and religion, and even sex. We didn't consider anything taboo, and we never evaded any questions either.
Bon Davis thinks his sons received a good education while taking the correspondence courses, and moreover, he believes that they learned how to study and learn on their own while taking these courses. He feels that this helped them greatly in their future studies. Both of Mr. and Mrs. Davis's sons went on to achieve academic success. Neil, the oldest, earned a doctorate in geophysics and is presently assistant director of the renowned Geophysical Institute at the University of Alaska. Lewis received a bachelor's degree from Parsons College and is teaching school at Long Island, New York. As time went on, Mr. and Mrs. Davis began to develop their land. Soon they had 26 acres of land under cultivation, and they raised a few animals for their winter's meat supply. They also began to realize that their homestead was as attractive to others as it was to them. Bernice and Bon had picked their homestead wisely, and as more people began to trickle into the Fairbanks area, more interest was expressed in their land. Several people approached Bon Davis with cash in hand, hoping to persuade him to sell a small portion of his homestead to them. This spurred him into action.
Well, that gave me an idea that this thing was going to be something more than perhaps just a homestead. So I decided that I would take a small portion of it and subdivide it, and just got barely started on that. Of course, at that time, you see, the old Richardson Trail, it was just a, they called it a highway, but it was gravel. There's a lot of potholes in it, and you get stuck coming to town right in the middle of the summer where the frost boils occurred. And they were getting ready to, there was talk about paving that, and So all these developments, such as that paving, and then there was quite a bit of construction going on at what we used to call Ladd Field, now Fort Wainwright, and at Satellite Field, which is now known as Eielson. And it was rather an ideal spot. It was right being in between Midway, between the two fields. Sometimes men working at Ladfield would be transferred to Eielson for a time and vice versa. So consequently, it was convenient for one thing. Another thing was we had pretty fair water there at a shallow depth. And with the paving of that road, the highway, it meant that you could get into Fairbanks in a matter of 15, 20 minutes, comparatively easily driving. So that people began to want the land. I wasn't in a situation, a financial situation, to really subdivide it and follow that out the best way in the world. And so I was under a financial bind most of the time. And finally I decided, when I got an opportunity to sell it to this group, called themselves Dahl and Gaske Development Company. I sold to them. And well, they began to show me some things that I didn't realize. I might have got more money out of some of the land than what I was getting, because they did. They raised the prices on the land. Of course, there was a lot of reasons for doing that. There were some developments that had come up at that time. We'd got electricity out there. And actually, it was worth more than what I'd been asking.
After Bon Davis sold most of his homestead to the Dahl and Gaske Development Company, things began to move in high gear. The land developers hit upon the idea of changing the name of the homestead site from Davis to North Pole. Mr. Davis tells how the name change took place.
When I'd started out, I'd given the name Davis to it, but one of the reasons for it was that the railroad switch there had been named Davis. So with that sign up there, in fact, I owned it. Well, we called it the Davis Subdivision. But they felt that if they'd changed the name from Davis Subdivision to North Pole, that it might have some tourist attraction possibilities, and it might get some manufacturing started. So though I wasn't too keen about the idea, but I thought, well, I didn't care what they called it. They'd bought it. So I went to, they asked me if I would go to the district, the United States District Court and request a change to North Pole, which I did, and Judge Harry Pratt, United States District Judge at the time, he issued a decree which made it officially known as North Pole. And it was shortly thereafter that I left the North Pole area. I came into Fairbanks.
Shortly after leaving the North Pole area, Bon Davis came upon a new job opportunity, which was to change his way of life greatly for the next few years. Mrs. Davis had found work at the U.S. Marshal's office in Fairbanks, and she soon discovered that there was a job open which she thought her husband could handle. Bon Davis, after considerable discussion with his wife, decided to accept the job.
Well, they wanted some general work done around the jail. And so the Bureau of Prisons had just taken over, Federal Bureau of Prisons. And they had some changes made, and I was working around there with some of these prisoners. Well, frankly, I was about scared to death that I might be attacked, you know, and all that. And I found out these prisoners were just ordinary guys, about like the rest of us. And So then I got to listening to some of the philosophy of this man at the Bureau of Prisons about treatment of prisoners and so forth, and saw what he was trying to do, and I got interested in it. Meantime, of course, I'd lost some fingers off of one hand, but anyway, he had a job coming up. He wanted an officer there, and I finally, when I saw that they weren't beating these prisoners over the head every day and all that sort of stuff, I wanted a job, so I spoke to him about it. He said, I don't think there's a chance. Said, I don't think you'd pass a physical. I said, what do you mean I couldn't pass physical? And he said, well, throw those fingers off your hand. I said, listen, just because I've got my fingernails trimmed a little too short, don't sell me short. I said, maybe that was what he wanted me to say. He said, well, try it. So I went right on ahead. Well, I got enthused in this work, and I went to taking their training courses they had. And finally became a sort of an assistant supervisor here at Fairbanks.
Bon Davis found his work with prisoners interesting and rewarding. When a supervisor's position became available at the Nome Jail, Mr. Davis expressed an interest and soon found himself packing up for a trip to that Seward Peninsula town. Mr. and Mrs. Davis moved to Nome with the idea of staying for about a year. But as he points out, things worked out a little differently than planned.
I was just to go over for a year, but that year stretched out to over 16 years in Nome for us. I had an opportunity to transfer out of the Nome Federal Jail to another one, in fact, come back to Fairbanks. But they were putting in a new facility over there, and I got to liking Nome pretty well, and so I turned down the chance to move back to Fairbanks and continued on there until I was with the Federal Bureau of Prisons then until the time of statehood, and well past statehood. In fact, I stayed over a month with the Bureau of Prisons while the state was taking over. And then I was out of a job. I had had an opportunity to transfer to an institution or two in the states. But I, being an Alaska-trained man, I was the only one of the supervisors that was. I figured that wardens down there might not relish a lieutenant that I had been rated who had not had the penitentiary training. And not only that, I got interested in some gold mining ground, and we still like Nome, so I finally, after 7 years with the Bureau of Prisons, I quit. And it was something that was hard to do because it's a sort of a something I would imagine similar to a fraternity in a way. Wherever you went, you were treated as though you were really a dignitary or a long-lost friend. Nothing was too good for you, wherever you went among the Bureau of Prisons people. And there's some very dedicated people in it. In fact, they have to be to stay in it. It'd drive you nuts if you weren't.
Along with his work as supervisor of the Nome Jail, and later his work as a probation officer, Mr. Davis found much time to engage in a search for gold, that elusive mineral which had originally attracted thousands to the beaches of the Seward Peninsula at the turn of the century. He describes how he was able to shake loose from his regular job to spend the summer months prospecting for gold.
Well, I had quite a bit of annual leave coming. I'd take this annual leave and go out and work in the summertime on my mining ground. And then after that was 1956 that I got this mining ground. In 1960, after statehood, went out to the, I had the chance of going in as probation officer at Nome, and I took that, but they gave it to me with the understanding that I would probably be out in the hills some during the summer. And it got to be a rather standing joke around there that whenever water started to run in the streams, you could always figure that Davis found some excuse for leaving his job to go out in the hills. But it was interesting out there. We never made any money. We didn't lose too much, and we got some enough gold to keep us interested along. But finally, I decided just a couple of years ago to rid myself of the gold mining because of my age and the condition of my health. Well, it was rather foolish for me to go out there and cause worry to other people. It wasn't going to worry me much, but anyway, I got a chance to turn it, and I did.
During his 16-year stay in Nome, Bon Davis grew attached to the town and its people. He gives his impressions of Nome and her citizens.
I like to think of Nome as this way, the way I describe it. Nome wasn't founded, it was just dumped on the beach. People came to Nome, like many other parts of Alaska, to hit and get. That was their philosophy. They didn't come there to build homes. Of course, a few stayed on, but they had become accustomed to living in minimal housing and conditions, but nevertheless they built homes within those shacks. But as a town, it's a shack town. Of course, they're trying to become civilized. They paved the street and they're getting some federal housing in and all that. But the thing that attracted us and Titus to know, still does, is the people there. There's something about a stranger, after you've met him, is no longer a stranger. He becomes a friend. But you could go there at the coffee shop, and you might have had not wanted any coffee at all, but you'd go down there and sit, and you'd know you'd meet different ones. There'd be coming in from time to time, and a certain amount of kidding around, good-natured kidding. It was just that that sort of made you a part of it, and it became a part of you, too. And I don't know of any other place that's quite like Nome. They say that there isn't, and probably just as well.
Our guest on this edition of University of Alaska Forum has been Bon Davis, a longtime Alaskan who saw his 160-acre homestead grow into the town of North Pole.
You've been listening to the University of Alaska Radio Forum. This program was produced in the studios of KUAC for the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.